The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter Number 14, Text Number 39, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on October 27th, 2011, in Vrindavan, India.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yat Idam Yoga Anushasanam na va etat avarundate yat nashtadanta munaya upashama shila uparata atmanah samavagnach wait samavagach chanti. I think this is a prose verse. It'd be difficult to chant. So I'm just going to read the verse. Ya idam yoganu shanam navad etad avarundate yanyashtadanta munaya upashama shila uparatat mana samavagachanti. Translation. And purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Saintly persons who are friends to all living entities have a peaceful consciousness. They have controlled their senses and minds, and they easily attain the path of liberation, the path back to Godhead. Being unfortunate and attached to miserable material conditions, a materialistic person cannot associate with them. Purport. The great saint, Jodh Bharat, described both the miserable condition and the means to get out. The only way out of it is association with devotees. And this association is very easy. Although unfortunate people also get this opportunity, due to their great misfortune, they cannot take shelter of pure devotees, and consequently they continuously suffer. Nonetheless, this Krishna consciousness movement insists that everyone take to this path by adopting the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The preachers of Krishna consciousness go from door to door to inform people how they can be relieved from the miserable conditions of material life. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai, Bhakti Tata Bij. By the mercy of Krishna and Guru, one can get the seed of devotional service. If one is a little intelligent, he can cultivate Krishna consciousness and be freed from the miserable conditions of material life.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha.
So, here in this verse, there's unlimited mercy flowing out of this verse. The first point, saintly persons, one of their symptoms is they are friends to all living entities. They don't have an enemy. For a saintly person, he is the well-wisher of all living entities. That is the first quality of a saintly person. You can't be a saintly person and hate somebody. If you hate somebody, you're not saintly. A saintly person loves everyone. That's the first point. And they have a peaceful consciousness. In other words, if you love everyone, then you're going to feel completely peaceful. If you hate somebody, you won't have peace. So the saintly person, he loves everyone, and therefore he's always peaceful. He's the well-wisher of all. The next one, they have controlled their senses and minds. And they easily attain the path of liberation. In other words, their senses and minds do not run wild. Sometimes, many times, my students will ask me, Gurudev, I'm chanting, but my mind keeps wandering here and there. Someone just asked me yesterday, who was that? You asked, was that you? That was you? Yeah, it was last night in the darshan, it also came up. My mind wanders here and there. It's a very common question. My mind is uncontrolled. Well, you can't, a saintly person has a controlled mind. So if you have an uncontrolled mind, that uncontrolled mind is your enemy because it's not letting you be a saintly person, not letting you be peaceful. So the first thing you have to do is bring that mind under control. Just like if you have a dog, you train the dog to be obedient. Of course, we don't, in Indian culture, in America they keep dogs. In Indian culture, they don't keep dogs in the house. They're not, but of course now they're doing the Western style. But I saw how my father trained our dog when I was a little boy. And he trained the dog to be obedient. The dog is not allowed to do something that's... If he does something which is outside with his permission, then he has to be trained not to do that. Just like the dog would pass stool in the house, inside the house. And my father, he would take the dog's nose and rub it in the stool when he did that. And that way the dog would learn, don't pass stool in the house. So the dog knew, if I have to pass stool, I have to go outside, you see. I have to be under the master's order, whatever the master says I have to do. So in this way, you have to train your mind not to do some nonsense thing. If your mind starts doing some nonsense thing, you have to chastise your mind. What are you doing, you rascal? Why are you holding on to this lusty thought, this angry thought, this greedy thought, this envious thought? Why are you doing this, mind? Stop it. You see? It's better you listen instead of playing with the book. Better learn how to hear. You can draw later, but now you should focus and hear. Because by taking this sound vibration deep into your heart, you'll become a great enlightened sage. Even at a young age, you can become a very great enlightened sage. We were training one boy very nicely in Austin. Maybe you met him, I know, Kirtan. He doesn't do anything during the class except he sits and hears. And he's become very learned in our philosophy by doing that. So we advise the children, don't play with notebook unless you're taking notes on the lecture. Oh, then it's okay. If she's taking notes on the lecture, then it's very good. And it's very, very good. And it's first class. Then she's first class student. Very good. Very nice. I mean, no one else is taking notes, only that means she's more advanced. Because she is taking the notes. She's more eager to learn than anyone else, you see. If she's taking notes, that's a very good thing. Okay. The next point is... being unfortunate and attached to miserable material conditions. Now, isn't that really stupid? Think about it. Somebody is attached to a miserable situation. It's really, really stupid. Somebody is attached to a miserable situation. Why would you be attached to a miserable situation? If a snake was biting you, for example, that's pretty miserable, isn't it? You're attached, oh, I'm so attached to this snake, I can't get rid of the snake. He's such a beautiful snake. I don't want to, just let him keep biting me, you know. Oh, he's so beautiful, I mean, he's got a nice color skin, nice scaly skin. He's such a beautiful snake, I wouldn't want to renounce this snake because he's so beautiful. He's biting you, you see. Only a fool would let the snake stay there biting you. Get rid of the snake, you see. Kill it, you see. But that person is attached to those situations that are causing him misery. They're like a person who's being bitten by a snake and doesn't want to throw the snake away. He wants to keep the snake because he's a good-looking snake. And so that's what it means to be attached to miserable material conditions. And such unfortunate persons, if they have an opportunity to associate with a sadhu, not interested. They feel uncomfortable. Because deep down, where they're guilty about engaging in so many sinful activities, and they know the saints don't do that, and they feel embarrassed around the same. I'm so sinful, better. I don't want to feel embarrassed, so let me get away from the saintly people. Apparently, these are the words. Yes, this is the great saint Judd Bharat speaking here. So he's describing, Prabhupada says, he's describing the miserable condition and the means to get out. Now here's an interesting point that Prabhupada makes now. He says, the only way out is association with devotees. And this association is very easy. But we just read in the verse that a materialistic person cannot associate with them. That which is very easy, they find to be difficult. Isn't that amazing? That which is very easy, the materialistic person finds to be very difficult. Sometimes devotees say, Gurudev, it's really hard to be a pure devotee. I said, no, it's actually becoming a pure devotee that's easy. When you try to remain a mixed devotee, there's two kinds of devotees. There's the Sakama and Akama. Akama means no material desires. He's the pure devotee. There's the Sakama devotee who wants to be a devotee, but yet he's maintaining his material desires. Actually, to be a Kama devotee is very easy. Because there's no more, it's just pure bhakti. You just do whatever pleases Krishna and Guru, and there's nothing else to worry about. That's all you do. But if you want to be a Sakama devotee, I want to satisfy my material desires at the same time advancing Krishna consciousness. It's like contradiction. So that's the position, the Sakama devotee is a very difficult thing. It's very difficult to be a Sakama devotee. It's very difficult. If you're having a difficulty being a devotee, it means you're trying to be a Sakama devotee instead of an Akama devotee. Once you come to the position of Akama, it's just the most easy thing you could ever imagine. It's so simple, it's so easy, like taking candy from a baby. It's a very easy thing to be a Sakama devotee. Akama devotee. So, the easy way to become an Akama devotee is you have to find a devotee or devotees who are Akama, and you have to take shelter of them. You have to serve them. You have to hear from them. You have to learn from them. And by doing so, you'll become blessed. And you will get a taste for Akama. You see, the Sakama position, it's like sand and sweet rice mixed together. Not very good. But Akama is just pure sweet rice, you see. So why settle for the sweet rice and the sand when you can get sweet rice without the sand? Now Prabhupada continues, he says, although unfortunate people also get this opportunity, due to their great misfortune, they cannot take shelter of pure devotees and consequently they continually suffer. So, in the next sentence we see what is the great mercy of Srila Prabhupada. He says, nonetheless, this Krishna consciousness movement insists that everyone take to this path by adopting the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In other words, we're being pushy, actually. We insist that everybody should chant Hare Krishna. We're being really pushy. We're telling everybody in the whole world, you should chant Hare Krishna, sir. We're telling everybody in the whole world that we insist that they should chant Hare Krishna. And to do so, we go from, just like you're going door to door 3 nights a week. It's very good. If everybody, all you can go door to door, I'll be very, very pleased. You also go book distribution. That's very good, going out and preaching. Rupa Manjari in New Zealand. This going out for preaching work, distributing books, this is the greatest mercy. This is what the members of the Krishna consciousness movement do, as described by Prabhupada here. They insist that everyone take to this path And the preachers go door to door to inform people how they can be relieved from the miserable conditions of material life. In other words, we don't just tell them to chant Hare Krishna, we give them information that you are suffering, sir, you are suffering, madam, in this cycle of birth and death, trying to serve your senses, which are like venomous serpents, and you're not getting satisfied by doing so. Therefore, you should take to this process of transcendental realization, Krishna consciousness, so that you can actually reconnect with your eternal, blissful nature. You're causing yourself unnecessary suffering by maintaining your position of sense gratification. And then Lord Chaitanya then, what is it? Why don't you shut the door? Yeah. Someone's banging on the metal out there. You shut it tightly. Okay, good. So then Lord Chaitanya has stated very nicely, Guru Krishna Prasadai Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one can get the seed of devotional service. Now here's a really interesting statement. Prabhupada's last sentence, he says, if one is a little intelligent, he can cultivate Krishna consciousness and be freed from the miserable conditions of material life. What if you don't have any intelligence? What is your hope then? I have no intelligence, you see. Well, you're in a pretty precarious position if you don't have any intelligence. Very precarious position. Then you have to beg the devotees to bless you with a little intelligence so you don't have any. But even if you have a little bit of intelligence, it doesn't take a whole lot, because factually we don't have much in this Kali Yuga. We're pretty dull-headed. In fact, we don't have much intelligence. But even with a little bit of intelligence that we have in this Kali Yuga, we can take up Krishna consciousness and be freed from the miserable conditions of life. Of course, when you do that, when you take to Krishna consciousness, that little intelligence expands. This is why it's stated that the pure devotee is expert. He's very, very intelligent in everything that he does. So now we are not very intelligent because we are not pure devotees. But if we continue this process, whatever little intelligence we have, you see, just like one lady, she was getting ready for initiation. Before her ceremony, and before the initiation day, she asked that if one doesn't have any faith in how you can actually take initiation. Remember them? One lady named Asta, she asked, if I have no faith, then how can I take initiation? I said, well, do you... Then she said, but I have a little faith. And I said, then that's all right. So Asta became Asta Saki. And because even if we just have a little faith or a little intelligence, you see, the spiritual master then, he will take that little faith, that little intelligence we have. If we engage that little bit of faith or that little bit of intelligence in the service of Krishna, there's like a spark. You can fan a spark into a blazing fire. So if we have that little, you know, little spark of faith, a little spark of intelligence, a little spark of sincerity, we just need a little tiny spark. If we submit ourselves to the spiritual master as the humble disciple, and the spiritual master, he will fan that spark of faith, that spark of intelligence, that spark of sincerity into a blazing fire. You see, that will completely destroy all of the material desires in the heart. So this is a very sublime process of Krishna consciousness. It's very effective. If you will follow precisely what Prabhupada is saying here, exactly to the letter, if you will do what Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna, associate with sadhus, then you will become self-realized soul. Just like the great sage Jad Bharat. You become a great sage like Jad Bharat. And you will have love in your heart for all living beings, and you become completely peaceful in all times, all places, and all circumstances. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
Gurudeva, that little sincerity, intelligence that we have, that comes from our own endeavor, or it's also provided by the blessings of other devotees?
Well, it's already there within you. You're actually a pure devotee. By coming in contact, it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhavaha Mahashano Mahapapa Vidvidang Vihivairinam. It is lust only, Arjuna, born of contact with the material mode of passion, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So actually, you have prema buried deep within you, but by contact with the material mode of passion, that prema became transformed into kama. So you already have that pure intelligence, the pure sincerity, the pure love within your heart. It's just you got contaminated by the association with the material mode of passion. And of course that degrades into tamagun as well, because when as soon as your passionate desires are not fulfilled, then you go into krodha or anger, which is the mode of ignorance. So the trick is to reverse the process. Just as prema was transformed into kama by associating with the mature mode of passion, now you take your kama and you revert it back to prema by associating with sadhus, you see. So you have it, but it's already there. Right now, you just have kama-ized prema, you see. Prema is your natural consciousness position. Jivara sarupa hoi krishnera nichidas. But you simply have to, therefore, associate with sadhus. You have enough intelligence to associate with sadhus. If you have that much intelligence, then by the power of their association, that natural prema which you already have within you, the kama will be purified away, and the prema will become remanifested. You understand? Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
How can we have love for all living entities? Like, till we are still conditioned. So, won't we get attached if we...
Won't you get attached if you love them?
Yeah.
Do you think our philosophy is detachment? Do you think our philosophy is one of detachment? No. That's the Mayavadis. I touch no one and no one touches me. I'm a rock, I'm an island, you see. You don't exist, I don't exist. It's all just Brahman, you see. Now our philosophies become more and more attached. Asakti is the ladder of bhakti perfection. The highest stage for the sadhana bhakti achieves is asakti. That's the highest stage. Attachment is the highest stage within sadhana bhakti. And then when you get to raganuga bhakti, then you go into bhava and prema. But on the sadhana level, attachment is the highest position you can achieve, attachment to Krishna. And when you're attached to Krishna, that means you're fully, you know, you have no desire except to Krishna consciousness. You're completely attached to Krishna consciousness. Then what does Bhagavad Gita say? Sri Shapanir also says, Yastu Sarvani Bhutani. What is it? Yastu Sarvani Bhutani. Atman. Atmanivandu Pashyati Sarvabhuteshu Chatmanam Tatona Vijagupsate. One who sees all living entities as my parts and parcels. Mantra 6, Ishapanishad Mantra 6. Very important verse. Yastu Sarvani Bhutani Atman Yevanu Pashyati Sarvabhuteshu Chatmanam Tatona Vijagupsate. One who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and it sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. So does that position make him materially attached? No. Because he doesn't love them separately, he loves them as Krishna's parts and parcels. He sees Krishna within them, he sees them within Krishna. His love for them is a manifestation of his love for Krishna. You see? He doesn't love them as those who can fulfill his material desires. He loves them as Krishna's parts and parcels. So that is the love of the devotee. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays, Svastayastu vishvasha kala prasidatam dayanta bhutani shivang mato daya manascha badrang bhajatam madoksaje aveshatam no materapya haituki. He's praying for all living entities. He's saying, may there be good fortune throughout the entire universe. And may all envious persons become pacified. May let everyone become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by engaging in devotional service, they will always think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us always engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thoughts of Him. So, to love all living beings is the mind, the heart and mind of the Mahabhagavad. Of course, for the Majjhamadhikari, he has to be selective. He doesn't associate with non-devotees except to preach to them. And if they are envious, he avoids them, because he can become contaminated and lose his faith by associating with the blasphemous rascals. But the Mahabhagavat, he can bestow mercy even on the blasphemers. He has so much love and compassion, he can approach everyone and try to engage them in Krishna's consciousness somehow or other. He's very expert at helping even the atheistic people to awaken their Krishna consciousness by defeating their philosophy, their atheistic philosophy. He challenges them. What is your philosophy? He asks them, what is your philosophy? And he patiently hears their philosophy, and then he defeats their philosophy. You see? So that is his kindness. He doesn't become materially attached in dealing with them, because his kindness upon them is to cut through their material attachment. He's like a doctor. He's dealing every day with so many sick people. Does he become sick? No. So a Krishna conscious devotee, he can deal with all kinds of materialistic people compassionately without becoming infected by their disease, because his position is to cure them of their disease. So if you're going to them to take their, oh, I love you, you've gone there to take their association, yeah, you're going to have problems. If you've gone to take their association, you will definitely have problems. But if you go there to give them transcendental association, that associating with them will give you more and more strength in your Krishna consciousness. That's why devotees who go out and preach all day, they become the most Krishna conscious. Even though they're dealing with karmis the whole day, devotees who go out for preaching work, they get the most mercy, the most realization, they become the most Krishna conscious, because they're going out to give Krishna to the non-devotees. So it's not that they become attached to living like, because they're associating with non-devotees, they become attached to being a non-devotee. No. They're going out to turn the non-devotees into devotees. So in this way, by dealing with non-devotees in this mode, they become more and more attached to Krishna, because they have to take shelter of Krishna as they're engaging in this very heavy-duty service of trying to awaken the fallen souls. They have to take shelter of Krishna like anything. At every minute, in a mood of prayer and begging the mercy of Krishna, my dear Lord, please bless me that this person can take your book, your Bhagavad Gita. So if you're in the mood of giving Krishna, being kind to the fallen souls means to give them Krishna also. It doesn't mean to gratify their material senses. You understand? Any other questions? Yeah.
Is Uttama Adhikari? adhikari in prema stage?
Is uttama adhikari in prema stage?
This question I was asked the other day. In the same question I was asked in Kaunas, Lithuania. Because according to the descriptions of the yoga ladder, or the bhakti ladder, the different steps given by Rupa Goswami, and what's stated in the writings of Rupa Goswami, we can clearly see that the initiated devotee who takes his vow very seriously, who's actually following his vows very seriously, he is respected as a Majjhima Adhikari. Now, at what stage on that ladder of perfection is somebody, is someone accepted as a Mahabhagavata? That I haven't read anywhere. Are they in the prema stage? Well, certainly the prema bhakti would be a Majjhima Adhikari, a Muttama Adhikari, undoubtedly. But the question is, can somebody in a lower stage be also accepted as a Mahabhagavata? Now, I haven't gotten an answer for that. I'm looking for in the books. I haven't looking for an answer to that question. But the definition of a Mahabhagavata is given in many places. An Uttama Adhikari, he doesn't have a mood to criticize anyone. That's one thing. He's very expert at defeating atheistic arguments. That's another definition given in Uttama Adhikari. He's always planning and thinking of how to make the whole world Krishna conscious by pushing forward the Krishna conscious movement. These definitions are given for a Mahabhagavata Uttama Adhikari. He sees everything within Krishna and Krishna within everything. These definitions are there. So, but the exact answer that you're asking for, I haven't yet found it in the books. Can one be a Bhava Bhakti or a Sakti Bhakta and be a Mahabhagavata? They haven't gotten that answer yet in my studies. Any other questions?
Kindly explain what is the proper behavior between devotees.
Proper what?
Proper behavior between the devotees.
One should always be very respectful to Vaishnava.
There are three types of devotees, so how to...
Yes, we have just got a seminar on this recently. There's three different levels of devotees. There's the... of course, another way of looking at it, there's those who are less advanced, those who are equally advanced, and those who are more advanced. One has respect for all three, but one deals with them in a different way. Those who are less advanced than you, you're merciful upon them. If somebody is a tamaguni devotee, they're attached to their arrogance and pride and anger, you respect them from a distance, but you don't mix, you don't associate with them. That happens sometimes. Blasphemous devotees are blasphemous. They say, just recently I heard someone said, any guru who doesn't promote Harinam Sankirtan is the ultimate activity, is not a bona fide spiritual master. But Prabhupada said book distribution is more important than Harinam, so that means... According to this is an ISKCON devotee. According to him, Prabhupada is not a bona fide spiritual master, because he said that book distribution was more important than Harinam. So such a devotee who's full of blasphemy, even blaspheming Prabhupada, you don't mix with him. You respect him. Well, he's at least chanting Hare Krishna. You don't sit down and take vishadam with such a devotee who's full of blasphemy. So there are sometimes we have devotees like that. We have to be very careful to avoid such Vaishnavas who are full of blasphemy. Like one of my devotees was told, oh, your spiritual master is a married man. He can't be a spiritual master then. He's married. You see, such devotees, Hare Krishna Prabhu, Arivao, and then they'll take prasad on the other side of the room. I'm not going to sit with you during prasad. Actually, I mean, who was Krishna's guru? Sandipani Muni. He was married. So I guess Krishna made a big mistake. He had a bogus guru. Krishna made a big mistake. So anyway, yeah, those kind of devotees, you respect him at this. Well, at least he's chanting Hare Krishna. You respect him for that. And those who are sincerely taking up this pathway, but they still have their material desires, you'd be very kind to them. Preach to them, cultivate them, give them maha, bring them books, you know, do everything you can to help them advance. Those who are on an equal level with you, be friends with them, share your, open your heart to them. And those who are, and open your mind when they open their heart to you. And then those who are more advanced, you serve them, you bow down to them, you hear from them, you learn from them, you serve them in this way. But it's all, in all levels, you're being respectful. There's different ways you show your respect according to the relationship with the devotee. But respect is given everywhere. To all devotees, they respect all devotees. Any other questions?
Sometimes we see devotees after taking up, coming into Krishna consciousness, after a while, stuck. You know, they're not advancing further. And they themselves feel they wanted to advance, but somehow stuck, not able to advance. For those kind of situations, what is the best thing to do?
So if one is, a devotee is stuck in his advancement, what's the best thing to do? Well, you have to help them. Well, they're talking about your, well, sometimes people ask a question, they're really talking about themselves. They don't want to say it. I don't know if you're feeling it about yourself or others. Sometimes they have people ask like that when they're actually talking about themselves. They don't want to publicly admit it to everyone. But in either case, whether you're talking about yourself or you're talking about others.
I'm asking this question on behalf of everybody else.
Huh?
On behalf of everybody else, I'm asking.
Everybody else, but not yourself.
I'm on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. How many of them feel they are stuck?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
How many of them are feeling that they are stuck and not making advancement?
I feel I'm not advancing.
That means you're blaspheming your guru.
No, that I'm not doing.
So the answer is this: if you're feeling that you're not, that means. Happiness in the mud of passion is nectarine in the beginning and it's bitter in the end. So the devotee is thinking, well, I was really fired up now, but now it's just not so relishable for me. Now it's more like becoming more like poison to chant my rounds or to get up for Mangalarti or whatever it may be. It's just, it's not as, it used to be so exciting, but now it's like, ugh, I just got to do it. Oh, I got to do it. That means Rajagun. Your devotional service is rajastic, it's not tamasic. If you're having that, if you're having the, the devotional blahs, as they say, an English word of the blahs, you know, like it's all now bland and dull and kind of not so enlivening. That means you've been doing your devotional service in the mud of passion, which is nectar in the beginning and poison in the end. You have to come to a higher level. You've got to cultivate the mud of goodness. You can't just go on in the mode of passion. You're going to burn out and give up Krishna consciousness eventually if you just go on in the mode of passion. Passion is good. Because if you don't have any passion, you just sleep all day. Passion is very good. We want you to have passion. But you have to combine it with goodness. Otherwise, passion alone will burn out and you'll say, I'm giving this up. So have that passion, but at the same time, you have to cultivate side by side the mode of goodness. That means transcendental knowledge. You see? That means learn how to meditate. Learn how to go deep into meditation. And how do you do that? Well, it's right there in your bead bag. You see? The holy names, your japa, is meditation. Learn how to go deep into japa meditation. And learn how to meditate in the kirtan also. Go deep into the sound vibration of the name. Let those... When you sing in the kirtan, let the vibration of the holy name penetrate into the innermost region of your heart, cutting through the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, illusion, and envy. Let it go deep in and cut through all those coverings, you see. In this way, whatever you're doing, try to go deep into it. If you're not getting the nectar, it means you're just skimming the surface of the ocean of nectar. You've got to be a deep sea diver. We want you all to be pearl divers and go deep sea diving for the pearls in the ocean of bhakti. And so you have to learn how to go deep. Whatever you're doing, do it with feeling. Do it with love. Do it with an intensity. Do it with focus. Whatever you're doing. You see. In this way, you'll feel how every day you're advancing in Krishna consciousness. You feel every day you're becoming more peaceful, more blissful, more knowledgeable, more compassionate, more ecstatic, everything increasing, 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 increasing. That's how you should be feeling. And if you don't, you're doing something wrong. You're maintaining, you're not cultivating sattva, you're just going on in the mode of passion. That's what I mean. So you have to learn, yes.
I have a problem with anger, and you know, sometimes, you know, you start off, you feel like you're almost in the mode of goodness, you do your rounds, chanting, you do some preaching, doing really good, but by the end of the day, I get angry about something. There doesn't seem to be much space between for my intelligence to stop myself often, and my mouth will go off, and it's like I'll commit some aparad. And then it's like destroying everything I've done. Yeah.
Okay, so, well, some kinds of anger is good. If you're angry at people who are blaspheming Krishna, blaspheming Guru, just like this Madhusava the other day, he was riding in the van with this devotee who was saying that gurus who don't promote Harinam as the only thing we really should be doing are not bona fide. So my disciple got really angry. They're having an angry argument, and this person was in charge of the vehicle. He was going to throw my disciple out of the vehicle. It was such a heavy argument. I'm very proud of my disciple for getting angry in that situation. If one blasphemes your spiritual master, then he's not a bona fide guru, and you become angry like fire, jai. Very good anger. But if we get angry over, you know, you're messing with my sense gratification. You get angry over that. That anger isn't good. We have to know whatever we need for our personal, whatever we need personally, for our materially and spiritually, Krishna will provide everything. So we shouldn't, especially sometimes we're, you know, somebody corrects us when we're doing something wrong, we get angry because we think, actually, no, I didn't do anything wrong. You were wrong to correct me for saying that it was wrong. That can happen. That kind of thing can happen. But we have to really try not to, always try to keep a cool head. Even if we're dealing with a situation where we do have bona fide anger, we should be very cool and controlled in how we deal with it. Just like Prabhupada told us, there was a professor at the University of Texas back in 1971 when we were just joined, and we all had joined in Austin, and this professor was preaching Mayavadi philosophy. He was very popular with the hippies. They would all come in. He would allow everybody to come sit. Even the unregistered students would come. He had a whole hall full of people who really loved it. He was spouting off Mayavadi philosophy, and everyone thought he was the coolest thing going on the campus. So Prabhupada was told about this. He told us to challenge him to a public debate and defeat his arguments with a cool head. So even if we have a disagreement with the devotee, we shouldn't escalate it into some kind of shouting match. But a very cool head. We should discuss everything. We should always keep cool. Don't become hot-headed. Because if you get hot-headed, then you commit offenses. Blaspheming devotees, you see. We have to keep always a very cool head. Even when we're dealing with atheists and blasphemers, you should very intelligently defeat them. If you just start spouting off anger, you'll lose your cool. Won't give intelligent responses to their answers. Anger gets in the way of intelligence. So always keep your intelligence predominant. Now, sometimes with a subordinate, you have to show anger to make a serious point to them. Like for a child, for example. You may have to show anger sometimes. Not that you become overwhelmed by anger, but you have to show anger so they take it seriously, what you're saying. So the anger does have its place. A show of anger has its place. Showing an angry demeanor sometimes is actually helpful, the teaching tool, when you're dealing with subordinates who are not acting properly. Prabhupada certainly showed anger many, many times, but he was never overwhelmed by anger. But that was always for the purpose of instructing us. It was not that he was angry about some material thing. So anger is actually a very wide topic, because anger does have a proper, anger can be properly used in Krishna's service, like Hanuman burning the city of Lanka with his, he became very angry at this rascal Ravana. He burned the Lanka city. Arjuna also had to use anger to fight on the battlefield. So anger can be used sometimes in Krishna's service, but don't let yourself be used by anger. If you're used by anger, then you'll become abusive of others, and that you cannot do. And we have to always be respectful to the devotees. So I don't really know the particulars of what you're getting angry about. I just gave a very general answer about anger. So, and you know, it really depends. If somebody is angry at you because, you know, you're distributing books, you know, something like that. There's so many different things. I don't know the particulars. I don't know if I should get into the particulars in the Bhagavatam class. It's for me rather personal. I don't want to do that. But the anger does have its place in Krishna's service. It's used for Krishna. You don't become used by it. But generally, we don't use anger in Krishna's service, but use it to lord it over others. That's how we usually use anger. In that, we have to be very careful, because to lord it over others is our very disease. And anger is simply an expression of that disease. That verse I quoted, that the unfulfilled lusty desires turn into anger. If you have anger problem, then you have a lust problem. It could be sexual lust, or it could be money lust, or honor lust, any kind of lust. Those things, when they're not fulfilled, they cause anger. So if you have an anger problem, material anger problem, you have to analyze what desire do I have that's not being fulfilled, that's making me angry? Because the real cause of the problem is the unfulfilled, you have that material desire. And when you don't get it, then you're angry. So you have to see, maybe you have desire to be honored, for example. You see? Because actually your mood should be offering all respect to others without taking any respect for yourself. But you have a mood, no, I want to be respected. So, and then when you're not respected, you get angry. Well, that means you can't chant Hare Krishna properly because you're not humble. So one has to be always in the mood of offering all respect to others, even if you don't get any respect for yourself. That will curb down the problem of material anger right there. Always be respectful to others, even if they disrespect you. One time a devotee got angry at me, hit me. Actually, he wanted me to hit him back because he really wanted to get into it heavy with me. So I just very calmly said, Prabhu, you hit a Brahmin. And he went, he didn't know what to say. He was completely defeated. He wanted to get into a heavy fight with me. I don't know why, but some devotee. I don't remember what I did, but in the Pujari room. He hit me in the pajari room. He just hit me in the face, you know. Wow. Pretty angry devotee. So I diffused it with a little philosophy. I diffused his anger immediately. He was just completely neutralized his anger. I had another situation where I used anger on a non-devotee very effectively. A show of heavy anger. I was passing out sweets on the University Avenue in Gainesville, Florida. You know, simply wonderful to everybody walking down the street. So I handed to a hippie, long-haired hippie, a sweet, and he thought he had a little funny, a little mischievous grin on his face. And he took his hand and wham, he hit all the sweets out in the middle of the street. He hit the bowl and all the sweets was flying out into the street. So did I just say, did I calmly just go, did I say, I am a person of equanimity and I just went like this? No way. I became like an Ashringa. I'm not going to imitate it here because it'll probably hurt my ears. But I took my finger like this, I pointed in his face, and I like I was going to kill him. I mean, I showed so much anger like I was going to kill him. I said, "You better get out there and pick up those sweets right now." Very intense. I yelled at the top of my lungs, right in his face, you know. And he went, "Oh!" And he ran out in the street and started picking up all the sweets. You see, he went out in the middle of the, the light was red, it was getting ready to turn green. He ran out in the middle of the intersection, he was picking up all the sweets like a madman to overcome his offense. So that anger was very effective. It wasn't uncontrolled. If it was uncontrolled, I would have hit him, you know. I would have pulverized him, strangled him or something, in uncontrolled anger. But I didn't. I was completely controlled. I had a complete peace of mind myself, but I showed the heavy, I made a show of intense anger as if I would kill him in a minute if he didn't do what I said. And it worked. So the anger can be used sometimes for preaching. But you never, but it's never you're overwhelmed by it. You're just using it as a tool, you see. But when you're, but if you're angry over, you know, not being honored, which is what we usually do, that's your fault. Because you're not humble. You're wanting respect instead of, you're not following Lord Chaitanya's order to give respect without expecting it. You're expecting respect. Well, I'm respectful to you. Why are you not respectful to me? You see? No. Don't expect any respect for yourself. Just always give respect to others. And a little insider secret, if you master the art of always giving respect to others without expecting any respect for yourself, in the long run, you'll become the most respected person. You'll become respected by everyone. You'll become very highly respected by all the Vaishnavas and even the non-devotees. Dira dira jana priyo priyo karo. Any other questions? Yes. What time is the breakfast?
9:15.
9:15? Okay, good.
When I am in sick condition, when I am sick, I am able to do devotional service at scheduled time. For example, Mangalarati, I am sick, doing Mangalarati after not in scheduled time.
What's he saying so far?
He's saying that when he is sick, he's not doing according to the schedule, the Mangalarati and all.
Okay. You live at home? You live at home?
Yes.
Or you live in the temple?
No, home.
So when you're sick, you do a modified morning program? But you still have a morning program?
Not modified, I'm just doing
a little late.
Huh?
He's doing just little late. It is modified.
No, if you're sick, it's okay. It's all right. Sickness has to be dealt with. It's like fire. You have to eradicate. You should immediately, if you're sick, immediately do something to solve the problem. But you're still having Mangalarti, but a little late. That's all right. Any other questions? Yeah.
Should there be competition amongst devotees to serve Sri Guru and Krishna?
Competition?
In serving Guru and Krishna.
For serving Guru and Krishna? Well, there's two kinds of competition. There's mundane and transcendental. Transcendental competition is very nice. Oh, this devotee has done such amazing service. I would like to do even better service than what he's doing. That's called transcendental competition. But it's not that you want to cut that person down and minimize what he has done. No, you want to, you appreciate very much what he has done, and you want to do even better. And that's very nice. Prabhupada told me that. He said transcendental competition means you see some other devotee is being recognized more than you, so let me try harder so Krishna will recognize me also. So that's transcendental competition. Mundane competition is you want to spoil that person's reputation because you want to be, you want to become more recognized than somebody else, so you cut them down and you make propaganda against them to destroy their reputation. That's mundane competition. But transcendental means you're happy to see them become more and more glorified because that encourages you to do even more service. You're happy for them to become even more, and the more they become glorified, the more you become happy and enthused to try even harder to serve Krishna. That's transcendental competition. Anything else? Yes?
Gurudev, how to fully put our endeavors in our activities and...
How to do what?
How to put
endeavors. How to fully put our endeavors.
And at the same time, fully depend on mercy also.
And at the same time, fully depend on the mercy. How much we should endeavor and how much...
Well, you have to understand that whatever endeavor you make, it's only by the mercy of Krishna you can make endeavor. Do you have any power to make any endeavor on your own? No. Whatever power you have to act is the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So you have to beg for more and more mercy so you can intensify your endeavor more and more. You think there's some difference between your endeavor and the mercy of Krishna? Of course, there is the mercy beyond your endeavor also. But your endeavor, whatever endeavor you're able to make in Krishna's service is only by the mercy of Guru and Krishna you can make that endeavor. So you should pray to be more and more empowered to make your more and more make your endeavor more and more intense, more and more focused, more and more energized, more and more potent. Anything else? Okay, all right.
They said that to properly perform bhakti, amount of knowledge is necessary. Is that knowledge also included as bhakti?
Any bhakti, any knowledge used in the service of bhakti, that is part of bhakti process. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who studies this sacred conversation is worshipping me with his intelligence. So, that knowledge we cultivate in Krishna's service, that is definitely an activity of bhakti, to become learned. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, our founder Acharya, he has bhakti and Vedanta both. So his Vedanta is not bhakti. It's bhakti Vedanta. There's a bhakti Vedanta, which is mental speculation, based on Vedanta philosophy, that the impersonal mind is the supreme. That's a bhakti Vedanta. But our Vedanta is bhakti Vedanta. It's devotional Vedanta. So the name of our founder Acharya should answer your question, bhakti Vedanta. As long as you have you study Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, according to the version of the great Acharyas, the great Vaishnava Acharyas, then your Vedanta is bhakti Vedanta. Okay, I think we can stop here. So we thank you all very much for your participation in this process of Krishna consciousness. Now become perfect. Take advantage of a holy dham to intensify your absorption in the holy name. Intensify your absorption in Vaishnava seva, in Guru seva, and in reading and understanding the sublime teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.